All right, good afternoon. Thanks everybody for coming. I do realise that the time slots say that this session is supposed to finish at 3 o'clock and the lock note is supposed to start at 3 o'clock, and it's a fair walk from here to there. So my aim is to finish a fair bit early so that those of you who want to run and get good seats can, and those of you who want to stay and ask questions can. And I also have a pile of t-shirts here by the look, and it seems that most of them are 2XL. I'm going to throw them down here at the end as well, so if anybody's wants to grab one of the t-shirts, please take them, because I certainly don't want to be taking any home with me. My name is Pete Calvert, Twitter handle at Aruxpo, and the session code for this is #WSV334. If you have questions about dynamic access control and either don't want to ask them, don't want to stay back afterwards to ask them, and you are on Twitter, please feel free to include the hashtag for the code for the session, WSV334, and #AUTechhead, and I will go through the Twitter stream afterwards and answer any questions people have. Is that cool? Fantastic. Just before we get started, how many people here actually have read or played around or know a bit about dynamic access control? Hands up, please. Cool. So maybe a quarter of the room of about 60 or 70 people. So for the rest of you, is it just the fact that I was presenting, or? I know what it was. You wanted to see more demo failures. For those of you who didn't see my session on Wednesday night, wouldn't have known that I had my demo environment all set up, ready to go. And the demo gods hate me here. And what I normally do is I videotape or Camtasia the sessions beforehand so that I can put them up and know that they will work perfectly. However, before I got to that point, the hard disk started making these sick little chirping noises, and then it died. So I came here without actually having a demo environment, so I actually want to thank James Finley, who's actually let me borrow his laptop. He's trusted me with his laptop. He's flown over from New Zealand yesterday and is flying back again before the lock note finishes, just so he could bring his laptop over me for me to use. No, not quite. He had some other things to do, but thank you, James. So the objectives that we'll have today, a bit of an introduction. There's a lot of people who said that they weren't really familiar with what dynamic access control was, but it's in the server track, and the server track's cool, therefore we should know about it. Because this is the only session on dynamic access control, what we'll do is we'll dig a little bit under the covers to actually see how it operates. And if you do have questions, depending upon how we go, feel free to ask the questions as we go along. And if I start running short of time, I might say, all right, let's delay any more until the end, and those who want to get going can get going with enough time to get a good seat at the lock note. Fine. Dynamic access control actually builds itself on the file classification infrastructure that was introduced in Server 2008 R2. Please, with a show of hands, is there anybody who actually implemented file classification infrastructure? I'm not seeing any hands, and I think that's pretty typical. This was a fantastic technology that could allow the server to dig into the content and have a look at what was in the files, and if it recognized anything in those files that might have been sensitive, things that looked like credit card numbers, looked like sensitive words that we'd earmarked as projects that really should be classified as confidential, it could classify those files, and that's pretty much it. It would have been really, really nice if there was some way to then restrict what could be done with those files, who could access those files. So we've pretty much gone to version 2 of file classification infrastructure. Are there still some gaps? Are there still some holes? Are there still some difficulties? Yes, but it's a heck of a lot better now. So what the goal is with dynamic access control is, instead of controlling access to these resources by groups, is we actually can control access to these resources now by the properties of the content itself, either what's actually in the file or what we have classified the file as. And coupled with that, characteristics and claims of the user account and the device from which they're running. Based on this information, we can narrow down our auditing to just focus on those files that we would think we really want to check who's actually accessing these files. We can narrow down our access control lists to more closely match business rules. And if we couple it with rights management service, anyone actually using rights management service? I see maybe one or two hands. I think that's pretty typical. Rights management service, now we can automatically then encrypt files based on their classification. The key thing to understand, though, about why dynamic access control can be such a game changer for your organizations is that control and access to the files is expression-based. So far, we have been restricted to limiting access to or. Are they a member of this group? Or are they a member of that group? Or are they a member of that other group over there? And if they tick the box in any one of those places, they get access. What we can do with dynamic access control is we can say, are they a member of this group and this group? Or do they have this value inside their Active Directory account information? And are they running on this machine? And is the file classified a particular way? We can string all these together to come up with access rules that aren't piecemeal, they aren't scattergun approach, they aren't ad hoc, and they can be easily auditable. So the first building block that we use to do this is user claims. Why do we use user claims? Has anybody heard of the term token bloat? Right, we've got quite a few hands. Is anybody suffering from token bloat? Is anybody suffering from tech head bloat? A few more hands go up. I think I am too. Token bloat, like tech head bloat, is actually significantly easier for it to increase than it is to decrease. And token bloat is where we have a predominance of groups. We've got so many groups that this person needs to be a member of in order to get access to the resources that they're required to use, that their Kerberos token fills up. And that can cause problems. In other words, we have gone and got the user to log on. They've been given a Kerberos token. They then present that Kerberos token to the resource. And the resource then has to go down and then check what groups they're a member of, go back to the domain controller, check that, what that group is before giving them access. Wouldn't it be so much easier if the information about the user in themselves was contained in that token? For example, how many of you have got groups set up for which department somebody is in? Just about everybody. Did you know that there is a department field in their Active Directory user account? How many of you fill it out? Quite a few of you do, which is good. Is it there just for kicks? Do we do do we do AD queries against it to see who might actually be in this? Users can edit it. We can actually change the permissions to allow them to edit it or not, depending upon what your organization is like. But in some cases, it's actually a good idea to allow them to edit. Keep the help desk out of the equation. All right? If we've populated the person's department in the department field, in their account, and that's included in their access token, why do we then need to go and create a group for that department and put the person in that as well? Wouldn't it be so much simpler just to say, oh, your department value is this, cool, you've got access. We have some additional classification enhancements that come originally from the data classification toolkit, which was an extra download originally for the older operating systems. There are some components of that that are already included in Server 2012. They're exposed actually through Active Directory. I'll actually show that to you. And we also have some denied access assistance. Normally when you go and try and hit a file that you don't have access to, you just get a little box that says access denied. Tough luck, so long, stiff beans. What we do have the option now is to configure that message. If they've been denied access by dynamic access control, we can get them to click on a link to request access or to send an email to somebody to say, I actually do need access to this file, please let me in. So, to reiterate, before 2012, we were restricted to making policies based on group memberships. And we had to have lots of groups. There was actually no way to transform a lot of these group access across AD trust boundaries. And there was no way to characterize users' access based on the device that they were using either. Now we have the ability to combine the device that they're using and claims inside their AD account and and them together in an expression to provide access. Just as an example, this is a massive organization which has got 500 projects running across 100 countries and 10 divisions. In order to provide detailed access to the resources, we would require 500,000 groups. In other words, each group would need to be along the lines of the project plus the country plus the division that they're in. If we introduce dynamic access control, what we can do is we can limit that down. We can say, right, instead of them having to be in a specific group to get access, we can say these resources here belong to Project Z. So if they are in the Project Z group, cool. And if their country is in the UK or they're in a group country, UK, and they're a member of the engineering group, give them access. We've now dropped from 500,000 groups down to 610. The person doesn't have to be a member of a whole series of groups. They might only be a member of those three. If we're going to claims, we can actually create stuff inside their AD account. They've already got the department, which is the division. We can add country. That's already one of the out-of-the-box claims that we can add. And we can also extend it to include projects if we want. We can get rid of groups altogether in this scenario. Let's just show you how this happens, and then we'll jump into a demo. So, resource. We have a resource. We set a property on the resource. You'll see we actually have a classification tab, the second tab along. And we will set it to a value. At the moment, the value is none. We do have a number of choices here, and the choices that we have, if I can read the screen, are high, moderate, and low. This is all get driven from the file for classification infrastructure. We then save those details back on the file. We can then, using dynamic access control, and this is where we have a 2012 AD controller, we can still use FCI if we've only got file servers. Once we put a domain controller in, we get access to dynamic access control central policies, and we can set up some business rules that match these classification tasks. We can then apply that policy back to the file server. In fact, if you have a 2012 Active Directory domain controller, any file server across the entire forest, this is across domain boundaries, is able to subscribe to these policies. And if we have decided to implement RMS, we can encrypt on top of that. Let's get into a demo, because I know you're all anxious to see how I fail. Okay. I have set up a folder here. And inside this folder, there's nothing else. I have five subfolders. Each of these folders has been classified to match department. So you see, here's my department. just in case anyone complains, I've actually got Zoom It on here. There's Department of Engineering. You can see I've actually listed the other departments down here that we can choose from if need be. Finance has been set as finance. And up the top, I actually don't have any classification at all. I have left that blank. These classifications are inherited. If I had set a department level here, it would flow down to everything underneath it. If I decide to create subfolders underneath the finance folder, they will inherit the classification that's already been set to say department equals finance. Any files that get put into that folder will also pick that up. These values come from here. And this is a really good reason for using the Active Directory Administrative Center. I have some resource properties. And these resource properties are all here to start with. And you'll see at the moment, I have department, and I actually have impact available. That's what these icons mean. All the other icons here actually say that these are not available at the moment. If I want to enable these other ones to be claims, let's just flip across here. Oops. You see the only two that I've actually got are department and impact. If I wanted to be able to classify these based on, say, company, compliance and confidentiality as well, I can just enable them. Now when I have a look, might need to refresh. Let's go back and talk to the domain controller, get some information. Because this will happen periodically, but we're just forcing it at the moment. Yes. Sorry, the question was, can I break inheritance? And it's still not. Did I apply it is the question. It should automatically be there. It might just be taking a little while to come through. Demo failure number one. No, it'll come up shortly, I'm sure. I'll show you then. All right. The idea being that once I know what rules I want to have, what classifications I want to be able to use, I set them up centrally. That way I've got consistency across all of them. I then go and create some rules. So I've actually created a rule here, a couple of rules, but this rule that I've created says provide access to owners, built-in admins, and the NT Authority account, and for, scroll across. And for domain users, I've selected a principal, domain users, this is an allow. I can set the permissions that I want. I can even include advanced permissions. And then I set up the conditions. And in this case, I decided I wanted to be the user rather than the resource or the device. And I want the department rather than a group that they happen to be in. and I want it, in this case, to be equal to the resource of the department. I can add other conditions, and they can be and or. I'll remove that one. The other thing to note is if you are going to be playing around with this, there is a tick box here that's automatically selected to say protect from accidental deletion. So if you've set up a rule and you go, I don't want that anymore, I'll try and delete it, automatically you won't be able to do that. You'll need to go back into the rule, uncheck the box that says protect from accidental deletion, and then you can delete it. We can also select what we're targeting. In this case, I only care about applying this rule if the resource department has the department classification set. If it has no value, if no value has been set, the rule won't apply. The other thing we'll note, and this will become important a bit later, is that we have current permissions if this makes it a little bit easier for me. We have current permissions, and we have proposed permissions, and we can have some previous permissions as well. The rule is actually applying these current permissions here, and you can see that that user department equals resource department is there under my current permissions. When I start talking later about staging policies, we'll have the ability to put extra permissions here under proposed to test things out without them actually applying. So let's cancel that. Once I've got the rules set up, I need to have some way of the file servers to be able to subscribe to those rules. So I'll go and create central access policies. And I've set up a central access policy. And it says, what rules do you want to apply in this policy? And I can have a number of different rules that I want to apply. At the moment, I've only got the one. If I wanted to, I could add the high business impact one as well, but that really doesn't suit this policy, so I'm going to leave it out. And I'll show you the high business impact a little bit later. So how does this work? I have two user accounts. I have user one, who is a member of finance, and I have user two, who is a member of marketing. I have set up, as I said, the classification on the finance folder to be department equals finance, and I've set up the classification on marketing to be department equals marketing. I will now switch across to user one.
What do you do for someone who works part-time in finance and part-time in marketing?
In that case, groups might be a better option for you. So if somebody's working part-time in two places, or you could be even more specific and create some workflows around their job. So if they're doing some days in finance and some in marketing, we might want to set up something so that when they log on these particular days, they actually automatically change their AD claims to being finance or marketing. It really depends if they're trying to multitask and do the two different departments at the same time. If any of you went to Carol's Architecting Identity Solutions session, and those of you who didn't, I would suggest really having a look at it afterwards online, she mentioned that one of the key things you need to do in order to be able to do a solution around identity is to work out how the business is actually operating. If you try and do it just within the auspices of IT, you're going to fail, and it's not going to get any traction whatsoever. Is that right? Is that right, Carol? Cool. Fantastic.
Marketing or slash marketing.
So can we do like a regular expression lookup on whether they're in, the department might be marketing/finance, and try and match part of that. Haven't played around with that. It's possible, quite possible to do. What you might want to do though is use, let me just flip across because it is relevant at this stage. I'll just show you this while I've jumped across to this user. This is user one. And they can get into the department share. They can't get into engineering. They can get into finance. They can't get into HR, and they can't get into marketing. The NTFS permissions on these are all the same. They're just inherited from the top. If I go to... If I go to user two, who we said is in marketing, and I do exactly the same thing, when they try and access finance, they can't do it, but if they try and access marketing, they can. So while I'm on the file server over here, I'm actually going to switch back to the admin. And what we're potentially asking for is file management tasks. And this allows us to set up a rule, create a file management task, where we can set up the condition. Give it a name. Techhead demo. Custom. Let's just pick RMS because it actually shows this is what RMS is actually built for. Being a wizard, it won't let me do things until I've actually filled out boxes. Let me show you one I've done in advance. Where are the conditions? Pattern match, was it? No, there is another one which actually has a pattern match. Which? Yeah, that's just for file names. This is always a problem when I go off script, isn't it? Talk to you afterwards, but there is a way of actually the way for RMS actually works, and the file classification one actually works is by using a match. Ah, here we go. I was looking at the wrong. I was looking at the classification rules. Here we go. We configure the parameters for the classification rule to match an expression, and it can be a regular expression or a string that we're matching. So if you're used to using regular expressions, in this case, the regular expression that I've got here is actually matching a credit card with four digits with a dash, then four digits with a dash, then four digits with a dash, then four digits. So you would just create classification rules to match whatever conditions you want. And then we can apply that to our classification structure. So a little bit more extra work than using the default settings that are already in there. Okay. That's how classification works. You might go, well, dynamic access control, does this mean that it's going to invalidate the other permissions that I've got? And the answer is no. At the moment, and hopefully most people here would know that if you've got share permissions in place and you've got NTFS permissions in place, the most restrictive out of the two apply, but they both apply. Right? So if you've got share permissions, if you've got multiple permissions to access a share, you get the best. So if you've got read-only and full control by to access that share, you get full control. But if your NTFS permissions are read and modify, you'll only get modify, and then we add the two together. Modify, full control, we take the most restrictive, it's modify. If we add central access policies and dynamic access control into the mix, we get exactly the same thing. So we're getting another layer of access controls. It says this doesn't apply unless we've told it to apply, and that's where I was talking about we can actually scope the target which resources we're looking at. And this way, whatever your share permissions are, whatever your NTFS permissions are, if your dynamic access control permissions are more restrictive than those, that's what you'll get. So you could probably see a situation where I don't want to have to make wholesale changes to my current environment. But there is a class of machines, or there is an area, or there is some other thing that is causing me problems, and I don't want to have to create a whole other slew of groups in order to be able to restrict them. What you could do is you can just layer the access control policies over the top of that and target it to just those machines. So if I'm accessing it from any of the kiosk machines or any of the machines that might be in a branch office, for example, limit it to read-only or limit it to no access whatsoever. It does not invalidate your existing access control policies, your existing authorization structure. So, for example, we first check the share permissions so we can access the resource. We then check the NTFS permissions. And then after that, we'll have a look if there are any access control policies in place. If they are more restrictive, we restrict it down. All right, the central access policies, I've already shown you a little bit of that. That was this one here. I can always add other rules, and what you can do is you can actually build up a collection of rules, and you can separate control of the rule creation and the resource classification creation from the deployment of the policies in the same way that we can actually do the same thing with group policy. If you're using group policies in your organizations, you can have one group doing the group policy creation and another one doing the application of those group policies. Let's see if those extra classifications have actually come through here yet. No. We'll chalk that down as demo failure number one. Will you trust me if I say it was working 2 hours ago? All right. Okay. Let's have another scenario here. We have share permissions where everyone has full control. We have NTFS permissions which say full-time equivalents have modify access and vendors have read access. We have a file that we have classified. Department is engineering and sensitivity equals high. And we've put in some rules. The rules are department equals engineering. In that case, engineering get modify and everyone has read access. Rule two is if it's sensitive data, if sensitivity equals high, this is the targeting of the resource, only apply this policy, this rule, if the sensitivity is high. FTEs get modified. And for sales docs, if department equals sales, apply the rule, sales get modified. So, share, they've all got full access. If it was just share access, in other words, it was sitting on a FAT32 drive, they'd get full control. Rule number one, engineering gets modified. So the engineering full-time equivalent and the engineering vendor both have modify access to this, and the person in sales gets read access. The sensitivity is high, so this applies as well. The FTE from engineering gets modify access. The sales FTE, because they're an FTE, remember this is a claim about this person, they get modify access. The engineering vendor, though, gets no access based on this rule. We don't have to explicitly deny. This rule says they have no access. Sales docs, the department for this one is engineering, not sales, so it doesn't actually apply. We don't care about it. It's not processed. Finally, the NTFS permissions. Full-timers get modify. Vendors get read. We add them all up. The most restrictive applies. Engineering FTE gets modify. Engineering vendor actually gets no access. And the sales FTE gets read access. If you've understand how share and NTFS permissions work together, then this shouldn't be too hard for you to pick up. If you do struggle with this, come and talk to me afterwards. So what will happen when we apply these central access policies? Central access policies require a 2012 domain controller in order to be able to be processed. So if you have an environment which has got 2008 R2 DCs, 2003 DCs, they won't be able to do this processing. And it does actually put a little bit of a strain on it. So if you are going to be implementing central access policies, you want to make sure that you've got enough domain controllers that are running server 2012 in order to be able to handle the load. That's why we've got staging policies. What a staging policy does is, in the same way that you can use group policy, the modeling wizard, in order to say, if I put this in place on this user with these conditions, what's going to happen? Give me a result. The way this is actually implemented, and once again I'll flip back to show you where the this is in the central access policies. The way this is actually implemented is it will create audit event entries. So rather than restricting access based on the new permissions, it'll say, if you do these, I'll actually record them in the event log for you and you can actually see what will happen. We can also do the, under the security tab, to look at the expected permissions that somebody has. All right, so let's jump across to this. I'm in my rule here, I want my policy. As I said, each policy has under the rules. Rules are implemented by the policies. These are the current permissions. I can enable permissions staging configuration. It's going to take my current copy here, and I might decide to edit this particular one and say, and the user has to be a member of the manager's group. So in this case, I'm actually picking up a claim about their identity, and I'm picking up something about which group they're a member of. Now, these aren't actually going to come into effect. At the moment, I've enabled them, and they will be being recorded against. They will be being audited against. If I find out that there are no significant problems, and I'm not getting, you know, fake access denied error messages happening in the event log, I can then go and apply the proposed changes, and that flips them back up here to the current permissions. Those were the original permissions that we had previously, and I still have the attribute editor to go to and check on what attributes I've got available. Click out of that. Click out of that. While we're here, let's have a look at the high impact stuff. I've got this Mark credit card rules here. And I have in the finance folder here some important stuff. I've got a credit card file here. If I have a look at the classification for that file, as we expect, hello, it's picked up the other ones now, company, compliance and confidentiality. If I pick company, I can choose Australia, New Zealand or USA. Compliancy, I have a whole raft of things I can pick. Confidentiality, finally worked. Impact's high, and the impact is high here because of the matching the credit card rule ran beforehand. If I have a look at the tech head stuff here, properties, classification. Currently, impact is none. There is no high impact here. So I could set up some rules or some other workflows based around the fact of targeting resources where the impact is high, and they would ignore this file at the moment. They wouldn't touch it because impact is none. Let's go and change the file. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight. Oops. 9, 10, 11, 12. That'll do. That's not my credit card number, by the way. Now, we can set this up to run automatically. We can set it up so that if somebody drops a file in here with this pattern in it and it matches, it'll automatically classify it. But just to show that what's actually going on behind the scenes here, I'm going to take this rule. Oops. Let's select it first. I'm going to run the classification rule. You can set up a schedule for how often you want to do this. That rule has run. Come back to here, have a look at the file now, and we should find in the classification that's now marked impact as high. Woo! Very good question. Can we implement these permissions in SharePoint or other products where we have resources stored. At the moment, it is restricted to files and folders. However, that is just using the Microsoft solution. If you go and have a look at the dynamic access control sessions from TechEd North America, and there were three of them, they all got really low evaluation marks because they were literally filled with vendor spots. What Microsoft has done is they've actually talked with a whole series of vendors and put out information about exposing how dynamic access control works. And there's actually quite a bit in TechNet, articles in TechNet about how dynamic access control works and how you can set up your own dynamic access control test environment. And there are products that have been developed by people to be able to do things like resources in SharePoint. And the other nice thing about the SharePoint one is, and I think the company that was doing that was Titus, www.titus.com. If you change the file to include sensitive project information or bits of code, pasting bits of code that are supposed to be protected, or credit card information or other things like that that will pattern match from the file classification rules that we had a look at, it will apply the rules in SharePoint as well. And because SharePoint does security trimming, users who shouldn't have access to it won't see it either. So there is a growing body of vendors who are providing these sort of products, and I think Microsoft have already, this is my opinion, have already maybe stepped on a few toes recently with some of the advances they've made with the out-of-the-box functionality. Are they going to integrate it with Exchange? From what we're seeing and what we're hearing in the marketplace, I expect that will be the way. I'm not Microsoft internal, and even Microsoft internal people aren't often talking to others in Microsoft internal. But there is seems to be a bit of a groundswell and a bit of a highlight here that this is really a good way forward. So watch this space and also see what some of the vendors are doing in developing products in this area. So there's a question over here. Good question. I haven't checked to see if it runs on RAFS. Maybe asked our local Canadian, Rick Claus, if you catch him around with a green hat. He did a talk on RAFS a little bit earlier and was, I must admit, mostly annoyed that I was doing sessions that he wanted to do. I just think he was wanting to be greedy. But no, I don't know. Sorry. First. Does it work with Azure? Yes, we can actually do with things in the cloud and federated across federated services as well. So, a question up there? Yes, you can. In the same way that you could remove administrators' access to things in the NTFS permissions, you can do the same thing with the permissions in here by removing admin or removing any permissions and then applying them. That's why it's always good to do the staging policies first to actually check what's going on. And, of course, admins already have that little workaround, I suppose, to go back and change things as well. We've locked out files down here, but we can get back to the central policies and refix them there. So, and this is, I think, one of the key things with protecting ourselves, is that we're protecting it where the access controllers are being applied, where the resources are, and if we do lock ourselves out of that, we've got the advantage that the rules that are being applied aren't set there. They're actually set in Active Directory. So we go back to AD and we change the rules so that they give us access again so that we can then get back access to those resources. Does that answer the question? Can you lock yourself out?
Using classification. So, like, it goes classified as high because you've put in a credit card number and it's matched with the pattern matching and it's changed the permissions dynamically.
Yes.
And so you lock yourself out because it says it's high impact, you're not allowed access.
Yes, absolutely. Can you lock yourself out? Yeah, what I would do then is I'd probably go back and just stop that rule from running at a time, give myself a little bit of an open back door to get back in, change the classification on the file, If we've got the rules that are continuously applying, sometimes there is a race. Some of you might have been to Steve Riley's sessions, heard times when he was trying to get admin access within Microsoft Corp. And his boss would like remove them from the admin group, and the race was on to see how quickly they could get admin access and then do stuff before their boss would take them back out of the admin group. And then once their boss realized what restricted groups could do, it was pretty much game over. They only had a really short period of time before the group policy reapplied. So provided you've not got it applying within seconds, and you're just leaving it with the default group policy renewal intervals or whatever other intervals you might have set with RMS if you're doing that, or the file classification rules, leave yourself a small window so that you can actually go in and change the classification on the file, or if it's inheriting, from above, so overwrite the permissions before it goes and reverts again because of the policy. All right. Sample staging event. So this is an example of what you might see if you were doing a staging of potential permission change. In this case, the subject is Alice. Her account name is Alice. The object she's trying to hit is a file, financereport.xls. The current central access policy grants read control based on ownership. The proposed central access policy differs in that access is not granted by the central access rule, high business impact. So if the file is actually classified as high business impact, then read will be taken away. We've got Alice, we've got the file, we've got the current policy, and then check and see what's happening afterwards. Now, given the time, let's just quickly flip through this and have a look at the tokens. The tokens that you are going to be generating if you're logging on from Windows 7 or from a non-2012 or Windows 8 box isn't going to include claims. It's only going to include your user account and your group, your groups and any other extra Kerberos bits and pieces in the pack. 2012 tokens and Windows 8 clients will include the claims information. So in this case, your user goes to log on. The admin has already set up the claims. The user receives a Kerberos token, sends it to the file server, and gets access. Pre-2012, so you're logging on from Windows 7. You get your Kerberos, your machine gets its ticket granting ticket, and you get your user ticket granting ticket. Neither of these contain claims. Ticket granting service, you try and access the resource. The resource says, hang on, I've got some rules here that need to apply. Because your ticket didn't include claims, but the server, the file server, is still running 2012, and the domain controller is still running 2012, they can talk to each other. And this is broken and left out the arrow. Somebody has screwed up my slide deck. All right, so if they have user claims, they will get in. Pre-Windows 8 clients, the policies are actually sent from the DC down to the file server. The file server can actually go talk back to the domain controller to do the claims check itself. That's what it's supposed to do. It's supposed to talk. And then it gets another ticket granting service back from the domain controller with user claims. And that's because it's a 2012 file server that's actually doing the request. It's picking up the user's ticket granting service and doing it on behalf of the user. And because it understands claims, it'll be asking for them as well. Once it's got the claims, it can then apply the policies. We can also do compound identities. And this requires a machine that's running Windows 8 or Server 2012. Because it can understand claims as well and can pull its information, we can combine the user details and the machine details. We can do it across forest boundaries, where we get a referral ticket granting ticket. We send this back off to the originating forest DC. We get the ticket granting service back with its claims, and in the situation where the client isn't claims aware, the server can do this as well. And we can do it to Azure or the cloud services. In the same way, we get our ticket granting ticket, we take it to the cloud. The cloud says, I need some extra information. We go and request from ADFS a SAML token because the cloud app doesn't understand Kerberos. The SAML token will include the claims information as well. We can send that up to the cloud app and get access. One of the major questions that we had asked at the product booth at Tech Ed North America was around token bloat, around the number of groups that we were using and the organizations that were experiencing problems with token bloat, the vast array of groups. And they said, will dynamic access control solve our problems? With all the caveats about our identity solution still in place and putting in something like FIM to allow for that automatic provisioning of things and to populate those fields in AD with the right claims. Those are some prerequisites if you really want to have a robust identity solution. Will it fix the problem that you're having with token bloat? Not by itself. You will need to set up the rules in place so that people can get access by those rules before you start culling groups. Question? Yes. So the question is, isn't the move to putting all this stuff in AD against the current move to pull stuff away and lighten AD? It really depends upon your environment. Do we really want to be in an environment where we've got disparate data stores and identity stores out there? Talk to anybody who's doing FIM solutions and they'll probably say, yes, that's our bread and butter. If you've got everything in AD, you probably don't need it. In my situation, where I work, we do have about three different data stores, identity data stores. It is more complex than having one identity data store. And it comes back down to your business needs. What is your business doing? How is your business managing identities? And if they're happy to have the entire lot given over to IT, great, fantastic. All right. If they don't trust you like some places do, manage it and then manage the provisioning of information so that we can leverage those claims and not have group bloat.
If you're letting your users update their own department name, country, whatever, and they go, oh, I've just had my latest pay review and I know my manager's stuck it in the pay review folder which I can't get access to right now. But if wonder what would happen if I went and changed my title to manager or my department.
All right, so if we're allowing users to go and change information in AD so that they can fake their claims, as it were, I think you've got bigger issues. So come down to your security, what security you're putting and what fields you're actually allowing people to either read only or do it. Given the time and given that we've got 15 minutes before the lock note, I might just quickly flip through the rest of the slides and then we'll finish off with any extra questions. So there is some impact on claims on your token bloat. The numbers are, if you've got a single claim in your token, it'll take up about 242 bytes. Five claims, about 970, and five claims plus two device claims, 1K, 1.3K, but you're doing it to remove groups from your token. So there is always going to be a trade-off, but the trade-off, if you do the due diligence and do the planning, you'll find that you will be able to reduce the bloat significantly by popping in business rules to stop the huge number of groups that we need to have. We can incrementally add more capabilities as we've got Windows 8 clients. Remember, they can do the device claims. And in summary, reducing group complexity, enabling information governance on file servers through centrally managed policies and rules, and we're implementing an effective access control that can be pushed out in the same way that group policy is pushed out. We can push out these rules throughout the organisation consistently. That's already been done. There's still time to get your evals in for this. Please do evals. If you are doing the evals, one's bad, five is good. I prefer fives if possible. Comments are really good too. We do have a look at the comments and see what people liked and what people didn't like, so we can hopefully adjust things. And if you do like my style of presentations and want me back next year, I need good evals to beat the Canadians. Extra resources, have a look at TechNet. There's a lot of good stuff on dynamic access control. And I'll leave those who want to get to the lock note now with 15 minutes to spare. Thank you very much. Anyone got questions, you can come down and ask them. Oh, T-shirts. Oh, let me put T-shirts there. And that's it for T-shirts.
First question.
Yes.
We use access share enumeration. Right, if you don't have permissions to share, you don't see the
share.
Will dynamic access control reflect through that? Or say a folder?